my opinion, this is the greatest 11 o'clock number of all time.
And in theory, I agree with you.
I love how we do the kind of like American Idol reveals, like.
I know.
Like we're like Ryan Seacrest kind
of. Cue the music. Drop
we're
the
gonna
lights.
Find this out after the break.
You should tell Playbill.com.
And I will. Dear Playbill.com.
Hi everyone, and welcome back to After Broadway, the podcast where we deep dive into anything and everything musical theater from the comfort of my car. I'm Tara.
I'm Stefania.
And in today's episode, we're back with another ranking episode, and this time it's 11 o'clock numbers. We are dwindling down our list of ranking episodes.
I know. I think we need recommendations. So
we do need recommendations.
Leave us a comment on Instagram, TikTok.
Yeah, we need some recommendations. But 11 o'clock numbers we thought would be fun and also easy because these are songs that, like, as we have gone through our lists here, there's also, like, many a playlist that I found online, whether it's, like, Broadway World or Playbill or even just, like, a Spotify playlist. These are show-stopping songs most of the time. But I sent you a message yesterday, and I was like, it's interesting to talk about 11 o'clock numbers because, to me, show-stopping could be something that means something different to you. Like, it doesn't necessarily need to be, like, a big bombastic number. Show-stopping could be, like, a solo, like, big belty moment.
Yes, I actually oftentimes think it is more of a solo moment. So I have a few things in my definition, but all of these things in my definition can kind of be fudged, in my opinion.
Yeah, like, I don't think that this one, in comparison to like other ones that we've done, has like a straight definition. It's kind of loose.
So the name 11 o'clock number comes from Broadway shows used to start much later at night. So kind of the climactic moment, the emotional moment of the show would be at 11 p.m. at night. Honestly, now at 11 o'clock, like, I'm in bed. I'm done. I'm over it.
I mean, it depends on the show, but yeah, like, the shows are typically over these days. If they start at 8, it's over at, like, 10:30.
Latest, like, 10:45.
Yeah.
10:45 latest. We're not really hitting that 11 o'clock time. But yeah, so it's called an 11 o'clock number because it was usually occurring for, like, let's say an 8:30 curtain around 11 p.m.
Some of them, too, I saw was that, like, sometimes they would start at 8:45. I'm like, that is so late.
I'm tired. I'm going home.
Intermission wouldn't be until, like, 10 p.m.
Honestly, I feel like this very early bedtime is a modern thing. People used to really party at night. Rich people especially.
We're tired.
People used to party at night, you know, not wake up early in the morning. Whenever you
I say this as we start our episode record at 9:30 p.m., but
we're like... We're working girls. We have other things to do.
And as soon as we are finished, we're going straight to bed.
Nap. So that's where the name 11 o'clock number comes from. So other kind of characteristics of 11 o'clock number.
Yeah.
Emotional climax of the show. Now, not the finale, not the ending, but is the kind of emotional climax. There's usually like a little bit more story to be told after.
I think sometimes it can be the final song.
I actually disagree on that. That's the midnight song.
There is a song on my list that it is the final song, but it doesn't include the, like, finale bows.
Okay, well, we'll debate that when it comes up. So I think it has to occur, in my opinion, within, like, the final quarter of the show.
Mm-hmm.
If you're too early in Act Two, this is not, you're not fitting the definition. It's got to be, like, the final quarter of the show. And I often think it has a realization or a revelation for the characters and for the audience. Like, it is a turning point, an emotional kind of, you know, aha moment for the characters, or an emotional release in that moment, in my opinion.
Also, this is typically, I think, everyone on my list here, yes and no, it's sung by the lead character. It's not like you're getting a random side character who's singing this big song.
So that's interesting. Sometimes I think it is a side character.
I think it depends on the show, but like,
obviously,
in just looking at this very long list, most of these songs are sung by the lead character.
I'm looking at my list. I would agree. On my list, they're all sung by the lead character. I'm going to point out some other 11 o'clock numbers here that are not sung by the lead character. I think the most extreme example of that is Ladies Who Lunch.
Yes.
That is an 11 o'clock number sung by our side character.
But I also would argue that that song is written specifically for that 11 o'clock number moment.
Absolutely. It's a show-stopping moment for a star. It was Elaine Stritch originally. And they're like, we have to give her this moment.
Yeah.
For sure. What about, let's say, Mean Girls, I'd Rather Be Me? This is a side character, in my opinion.
So I actually think there are potentially two 11 o'clock numbers in Mean Girls. I think Rather Be Me, and I would also say World Burn.
Hmm.
They're both almost at the same point in the show, and both characters have a revelation in that moment.
Right. But would you say either of those are the main character?
Regina more than Janice, but no, Katie is the main character of that story.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
This is the thing, too. I do think that shows have possibilities of having more than one. I also think, based on these, like, loose set of rules, songs can be argued to be an 11 o'clock number.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually do think this is the most open one, maybe, that we've talked about, and we can debate here and sit here. And I was reading lists online, and people were like, I think this one is it. And yeah. They're like, too early in the show.
Like,
too early on the show.
Honestly, if you want to have a good time, search 11 o'clock numbers and go into a Reddit page and you'll see what people actually think.
People be like, too early. And I'm like, you're right. That is, someone, somewhere it happens is too early.
Someone specifically was like, this would happen at 9:45. It is way too early. I'm like, how do you know that?
Stop watching here. You've got to stop watch. There's one more that I was going to just bring up here.
Oh, another one. I mean, I don't know if it's on your list, so maybe I shouldn't say it. It's by a side character. Like, Revolting Children is sung by Bruce.
See, okay, that's actually interesting because the 11 o'clock number I have here is My House, and that's the one I was going to bring up. I would argue for My House, personally.
Really?
Yes, because Revolting Children is too late in the show, in my opinion.
Revolting Children is on all of the Spotify playlists as the 11 o'clock
number. And I think they're wrong.
See,
I think it's My House. I think My House fits the more traditional definition of an 11 o'clock number. You've got one character who is having this kind of, like, emotional breakthrough moment. They are belting to the audience, like, wailing, giving a vocal performance, which I think a lot of these songs are doing. They're giving vocal performances. And you are having this kind of, like, cathartic emotion and realization with Miss Honey in that moment.
You're not having it with Bruce? I think you're also having
it with Bruce. That's more of a party moment. That's more of like a party
Maybe that
moment.
Fits the definition of a big show-stopping song.
My argument for Matilda would be that My House is the 11 o'clock.
I feel like we're about to argue children. A lot on this episode.
I think Revolting Children is the finale. It's the end.
You should tell Playbill.com.
And I will. Dear Playbill.com. In what world do you think?
Something else, too, that's on the, like, Wikipedia definition of 11 o'clock number is what we've kind of been talking about, of how you said that, like, it is differentiated from the finale and that it's not the final number in the show. But then the next line is, but even this is not considered a requirement by some commentators. So, me. Not a requirement from me.
It's a requirement by me. It's a requirement by me. It's a requirement by me.
Well, okay. Let's get into it. Give me your number five.
My number five. This actually is one of the only ones that is a full on... This is my only one on my list that is a full ensemble of the show in this song. It is actually also the most modern musical on my list.
Mm-hmm.
From the musical, we might argue, but I don't know if we're gonna argue. From the musical, A Strange Loop, I have Precious Little Dream / AIDS is God's Punishment. That is my 11 o'clock number from A Strange Loop.
AIDS is God's punishment.
Sing your song, brother, sing your song.
For the man who ain't living right.
You hear that, Curtis?
AIDS is God's punishment.
Lord, he heard my cry and pitted every groan.
For he who sins in the night.
Let him know.
AIDS is God's punishment.
Wow. I never thought that song would make it on a list.
You know what? It's like my top two fave songs in this show. So why
also what an iconic moment on stage.
What an iconic beat. That's why, right? You've had one aesthetic for the majority of the show, and then during this song the stage unfolds for you and changes everything, and you're having this moment with Usher where he is he's kind of always placated his mom, in my opinion, and in this moment he's like, I'm not doing that anymore. What you're saying is hurting me. What you're saying is hurtful to me. And in my mind, that's like his emotional relief in that. And then you come the finale after, which is the title song, A Strange Loop. But this kind of Aids of God's Punishment, you have Usher singing, you have his mother, you have all the thoughts, this gospel number. It is a somewhat different sound to what you've heard before. And it just feels so big and so grand. And it is a show-stopping moment in the show.
I mean, I agree with you. When you said a big ensemble moment, I would have never thought this because I don't consider A Strange Loop a big ensemble moment.
Well, it's the full ensemble.
It's the full ensemble, which is like five people. But it's definitely show-stopping. It was the most shocking moment during the entire show for me. And yeah, I agree. I would have never thought that this would make it on a list.
We're trying to pick different things sometimes.
I know. I was about to say, the songs on my list, like, normally I'm like, these are the ones that I listen to all the time. Like, half of these songs, I love them, but I don't listen to them, like, daily type thing. And I've just been like, we need to branch out. We can't always have, like, Wicked. We can't always have...
I cannot speak about the musical company one more time.
I was going to say... Podcast,
even though I just did 5 minutes ago.
I swear to God, if Cabaret is on your list...
It's not.
Growth. Although, what an iconic...
We will be seeing 11 o'clock some Sondheim coming up. We will be seeing Sondheim coming up. Okay. Anyway, go on. Tara,
okay,
your
number five. This is a song that I have loved for years. It's a show that I am not super, super familiar with, but this is where I break the rule here, and it is the final song of the show, and that is Home from The Wiz. And I feel like this, although it's the final song, I think it does exactly what the definition says, which is, one, it's a show-stopping number to me because the vocal performance that's given any person that ever plays this character is outrageous. And two, like, they are having a revelation. It is all about, like, how to get back home. Yes, like, the lyrics of living in this world might be a fantasy, but it's taught me to love. Like, you are having these teaching moments. So in that sense, I know that it breaks the rule of, like, finale, but I actually think this song fits the... definition of an 11 o'clock number. And my choice for this one maybe is breaking the rules on like tradition, but my favorite version is actually from The Wiz Live. Who Shanice Williams sings the hell out of this song. It is so, so good. Watching clips like the other day, I forgot how good The Wiz Live was.
The Wiz Live was good. I agree. The Wiz Live was one of the top ones.
The Wiz coming back to Broadway. But I just think this song is so beautiful. I think the lyrics are so, so beautiful. And yeah, like the revelation aspect of it. It's to think of this too could be an I Want song, but that's so late for an I Want song. Right. But there are like aspirations of like,
sure,
hopes and dreams for when, like, going back home. So, I don't know. It's a song that I think could hit many boxes.
Yes, the structure with the... We've talked about I Want songs on this podcast. Do we need to rehash it? No, but we'll briefly rehash it. I Want songs usually take place, let's say, in the first third of the show, but that is a rule that can be broken in order to serve the story and to serve that specific character. And when you're talking about a character like Dorothy, who is so young, who's a teenager, who doesn't really know what she wants, and the journey of the show is figuring out what she wants, I don't think it's crazy to have that kind of I Want moment right at the end and to kind of combine these two moments. I'm not mad at your choice. I know it is the final, song, but I also don't know if it's the finale because there's like still stuff that happens after.
I know it's hard to tell, but it is like if you're looking at a cast recording, it is the final song on the cast recording.
Yes, but yeah, like she still has to go home after.
Well, I mean, The Wiz Live literally just ends with her like meeting Aunt Em again. Like she clicks her heels together. Yeah, and like
it's not like a long scene after, but it is like a brief scene.
But it's It's interesting because, like, The Wiz has been around forever, obviously. There haven't been that many versions of it. This is only the second time that it's been on Broadway, I believe.
Yeah.
And just reading the lyrics, I was like, oh, this feels so timely and needed that I'm so happy that this is coming back.
This is actually the second time it's been on. The third time it's been on Broadway.
Oh, okay.
So 1975,
but the last time was a long time ago too, right?
1984 was the last time it was on Broadway.
Yeah, so there's been such a long period of time in between.
Yes. Almost 40 years. So, very true.
Yeah.
I'm excited. I've only ever seen the Wiz live version and parts of the movie. I don't think I've seen the
same.
Whole movie.
I've also only seen parts of the movie. But I've listened to... Literally when I was going through, like, the playlist of 11 o'clock numbers and I had remembered this song, I then went through to look at other songs from The Wiz. Every song slaps. It is so good.
Be a lion. Like, let's be a lion.
But, like, Ease On Down the Road. Like,
yes. Brand new day.
Brand New Day. Brand new day. Great. Okay. What's your number four?
My number four. Okay. This is kind of maybe the... No, that's not true. This is a softer moment in the show. And I feel it really follows the rules in that it's like in the last quarter of the show. And also we still have the kind of last action sequence to follow it. But it's our remaining main characters having this emotional moment of realization. And it is the song... No One Is Alone from Into the Woods.
I knew this was going to be on your list.
Mother isn't here now.
Wrong things, right things.
Who knows what she'd say?
Who can say what's true?
Nothing's quite so clear now.
Do things, fight things.
Here you've lost your way.
You decide, but you are not alone.
Believe me, no one is alone.
No one is alone, believe me.
Truly, you move just a finger.
Say the slightest word,
something's bound to linger
behind. No one acts alone.
Careful. This is one of my favorite songs in a musical ever, and it never fails to make me cry.
Wow, but you didn't want to save it for tearjerkers? There's a song on here that is also my tearjerker, but it had to be here.
I know, it had to be here. So, again, it's before the resolution of the show, but it's after all of these extremely dramatic things have happened. All of these characters have lost people in their lives, and they don't know what the next thing will be for them. They've gotten everything they ever wanted, and then they've lost almost everything they've ever wanted. And it's kind of like, okay, what next? What do we do next moment? And it's also these, you know, not older, but Cinderella and the Baker turning to Jack and Little Red and trying to just like explain the world to them almost, and in a sense like explain the world to themselves. Like, it's like they're coming to these realizations as they're, you know, trying to help these young children. And I think it like gives them the strength to, you know, finish this show, like kill the giant, save whoever, and go on and keep going. And so I absolutely love this song, and I think it's such a beautiful moment where the show kind of stops and like takes a beat before it picks back up again. And I absolutely love, I think it's the 2002 cast recording where the song is ending and it's so beautiful, and then it's just like the stamp of the giant's foot right at the end.
Oh, really?
It cuts off the final like bit of the song, and it doesn't how it happens in the show too, but it cuts off that final bit of the song and it's just like boom. And you're just,
I don't
like, let's
know
go.
That I've heard that one.
I believe it's the 2002 version.
Okay, great.
So, a tip.
Not Company, but still a Sondheim.
No. Tara, what is your number four song on this list?
Okay, my number four, again, this is a show I've never seen. But this was a movie I was obsessed with, when it came out, and then have listened to the cast recording a lot. And my number four is, Come to Your Senses from Tick, Tick, Boom.
Mm.
This is an interesting one because I think in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't quite follow the definition, because Tick, Tick, Boom isn't a show that follows a definition,
sure,
per se. It's kind of open, but this is the like final song that Jonathan needs for Superbia. And it's sung by Carissa, right? That's her name?
Maybe? I don't know. Carissa. I think
it's,
yeah.
Yeah. But the song is, as much as it's for Superbia, it's also for his relationship with Susan.
Let me interrupt you right here for one moment. I would consider the 11 o'clock number of this
louder
show.
Than words.
No, that's the finale. Why? I would consider it why.
I mean...
The solo Jonathan Larson moment. The solo Jonathan moment.
Yes, I agree. But I think the revelation happens with Come to Your Senses. Come to Your Senses is the revelation. It's the song that was missing. Mm. It is the missing piece of Superbia. It is what he can finally, like, close that chapter and move on. Whereas Why is kind of, like, going through his life and, like, thinking... What's the friend's name again?
Is it Roger?
No, that's Ren.
Sorry. Michael.
Michael. When he finds out that Michael has AIDS, like, he's having this whole, like, emotional turmoil moment, which I would also argue that he's having that moment the entire way through the show. Sure. Like, he's lost. But to me, like, I understand it. Also, ballad-wise, belty-wise, why is the moment? However, I think we close a chapter with Come to Your Senses, and he can finally move past the thing that was holding him back for so long.
I still think I disagree. I still think the 11 o'clock is why.
Well,
for this. But that's why it's your list.
Yeah, my list. Again, I do like, I love the cast recording, but I'm choosing for this one the Vanessa Hudgens, Alexander Shipp version because wow. Obsessed.
Come to your senses. Come to your senses. Come to your senses. Come to your senses. Baby, come back alive.
Vanessa gave a performance of her life in Tick, Tick, Boom, and we should pay respect.
Not Amy Spanger on the original Off-Broadway cast recording?
Amy Spanger, great, but, like, was she giving the Baby V performance that I asked for? No.
Maybe come back. Maybe come back to me.
Okay. What a great song.
Sneaker night. Put some sneakers on.
Basically, what we're gonna do is dance.
Okay. Those were a time. Oh, wow. Fantastic. Okay. Number three on my list is a song from a musical that I love that I've spoken about on this podcast before. I love how we do the kind of like American Idol reveals, like,
I know.
Like we're like Ryan Seacrest cutting
cue the music.
We're gonna find this out
after the break.
we tease it before we actually say it. Like, why do we do this? We never agreed we were gonna do this. We always do.
No, but every episode we've done it.
We're like, this is a musical. We're giving hints. Like, it's like Easter eggs. Like, I'm Taylor Swift hiding, like, phrases in the album notes. Okay? Here we go. Should I just say it now? No,
give the build up.
I think this one fits a very traditional definition. It's in the final quarter of the show. It's sung by our main character. It is the first time where our main character has truly expressed how he's feeling to other people. Throughout the entire show, we've seen this character and we haven't quite understood his motivations. And in this moment, he reveals all to the audience, but also to the auditioner, because this is Billy Elliot. This is Electricity from Billy Elliot.
Wow. This is on my long list.
This is on the long list. I love this because, again, I really feel like it fits so well into the story. It's like, Billy, how do you feel when you dance? He's not going to make it into the ballet school before they ask this question. And he turns around and he does this beautiful, he just explains in a beautiful way. And you've been watching this whole show and you've kind of been a little bit confused. You know he's talented, but you've been like, why is he still dancing? Does he like it? He's just kind of been internal. He's been feeling shy about it, not expressing his feelings. And finally, he expresses to the auditioner, to his father in that moment, and to all of us as an audience, how he's been made to feel when he's dancing. And then what I also love about it is then when words are not enough, when song music is not enough, he dances and he shows his feelings through dance and shows his talent. And I think that is kind of the moment where, you know, even before you find out he gets in or not, you know he's going to go to this ballet school and his life is going to be changed from that moment on. So it's really like a breaking point. There is a before and an after this for the character of Billy. And I think that's why it works so well as that 11 o'clock climax moment.
And suddenly I'm flying, flying like a bird, like electricity, sparks inside of me, and I'm free, I'm free, free. I'm free.
It's a great song, it's a great scene. I was literally talking about Billy Elliot the other day at work because one of my coworkers said that when he saw it here, he didn't like it. And I was like, I kind of felt the same way until I saw the Stratford production and then everything changed.
So interesting.
So whoever is Billy really matters.
I do think that Billy is really important. I have been lucky enough to see it twice, the first time on Broadway with most of the original Broadway cast, including David Alvarez, West Side Story, the movie David Alvarez as Billy. And then again in Stratford, that was in 2019, I think we saw in Stratford. Mm-hmm. And I loved really both of those productions, thought they were so beautiful. So
yeah,
one of my faves.
Okay, number three. Now I feel like I can't do it. I feel like I have to just say what it is.
Spit it out.
This is from a show that I saw last year on Broadway. And even though we talked about the fact that I didn't love it, this is a moment that I absolutely loved. And my number three song is All the Waste of Time from Parade.
I never knew.
Would you argue this is correct, or would you say
this is correct in my opinion? This
okay, because I have seen differing opinions that like this is not over yet is the moment, but I think it's actually too.
This is not over yet. It's really early in Act Two, in my opinion.
There's a lot of scene that has to happen in between, and I think that like this is more of a Leo song than a Lucille song, All the Waste of Time, and it really does like tie up their love story, even though it ends in a tragedy. But it's like the final time that they see each other before whatever happens. And I just think it's such a beautiful moment for this couple on stage who, it's interesting because when I saw Parade, I was like, I don't quite understand the like obsession of Ben Platt and Michaela Diamond together, because we don't really see Lucille and Leo together that much during the show until you get those two showstopper songs in Act Two. And this is definitely one of it, when it was like, oh, they really did have this like loving, tender relationship that was thrown away because they never got to spend, for what we saw, time together, or that much time together. So obviously this ends in a tragedy. It fits I don't think there's like a revelation moment, but I do think that this is like a goodbye moment, in the sense of like, he kind of knows what's going to happen. She is choosing sort of not to believe. They're still fighting for his rights. And then it's okay, but we have this one night together. Let's spend it. This time together. Let's love each other for that final time. And then say goodbye. So it's a very devastating 11 o'clock number, but it's beautiful.
I think it is like a release of emotion. They've realized, I mean, not to say, they've wasted all this time. They realized they thought they had a lifetime together, but turns out no. And it's like a coming to terms with that in that song.
So
Yeah, it's a. This is a devastating one.
I know. Sorry, to bring those down.
Some of these are sad. Some of these are sad. Some of these are like more triumphant, but I think a lot of times it's very sad.
Yeah. My number one is, well, sad but not.
Yeah. This is a, okay. Well, we're gonna move to my number two, which I think is not. Again, sad is not always the right word. Like that one was a sad one. Sad is not the right word here. I think I'm gonna go with kind of. Not serious. This is not the right word. I'm trying to... I don't know what the right word is, but they are emotional. They are... They are, again, often the emotional climax, if not the plot climax of
it's,
the story.
It's often, like, whether happy or sad or, like, in the middle, it's a release for this for the characters. So, emotional release.
Okay. Let me tease my next one, too. Okay, this is a song that is technically sung by the main character, and yet it is also the first time where this performer in the show gets to take center stage and center herself in the action. This is a show I've seen once. I saw it in Toronto. And this is a song that makes me cry. And so this is the song Telephone Wire from Fun Home.
This was almost on my list.
Almost on the list?
It's on my long list right now for tearjerkers because, damn.
I know. I was seeing articles about Fun Home, and there's, like, there are 3 11 o'clock numbers back.
I was going to say, I was like, the song that the mother sings, Days and yes. Days, is that what it's called?
Yes. That's also, like, kind of a classic 11 o'clock moment.
Mm-hmm. And then also, but Days and Days is much earlier.
Yes.
Than Telephone Wire.
Because but it's then, one act, it's kind of funny, but...
You could also, I think it's the standalone dad song. I think it's Edges of the World.
Yes.
Yeah.
These kind of 3 back to back. So the reason for me it's Telephone Wire is because we've had Allison, like big Allison, narrating and kind of being outside the action and writing the action and observing her life. And then for the first time in this moment, it's teenage her who experiences this, but... when she, as adult Allison, who has, you know, lived her whole life, steps back into that moment with her dad and relives that experience. I'm going to cry now because it's... for me, like, that's... like, her sitting in, like, the passenger seat of the, like, car on stage is one of the most emotional just, like, moments in that show. And her trying to, with her full life experience of that time, trying to understand her father in that moment and trying to understand... why their relationship was the way that it was and why he made the decisions that he made and what kind of life that he lived and what kind of choices that he had to make make this song to me kind of the emotional climax of the show.
Telephone wire, long black line, telephone wire, finely threaded sky. There's the pond where I went waiting. There's a sign for Sugar Valley. On the mountain, light is fading. I go back to school tomorrow.
I agree. I do think it's interesting because I also saw the same either article or just like playlist that had all 3 songs on there. But I agree it is difficult with a one act because you don't have the intermission break. So really, that song is at like 9:30.
I know. This 11 o'clock number at 8:45.
Yeah. I think also, like, could be argued that there's a lot of emotional revelations all the way through that whole show.
For sure, for sure. But I think the way that they differentiate this song is by... they've been breaking the fourth wall the whole time by having kind of Allison narrate and telling the story throughout and observing. But by having her step into the story, I think separates that moment in the show from the rest of the show.
Yeah. No, love it. Okay, my also what's proud of us because we have barely, first of all, we have not overlapped, and also these are a lot of new shows.
We're trying to do fun things here.
I mean, not new shows, but like shows that we have not talked about a million times. Yes. Okay, my number two. So this one is an interesting one because I think there's been different iterations of it, and I think the 11 o'clock number has actually changed post the movie musical, but I'm not going to go off of that because that was created later. So my number two is One Night Only from Dreamgirls. So let's forget about chances. One night I will give.
You want all my love and my devotion. You want my loving soul right on the line.
And I would argue that now the 11 o'clock number would probably be Listen. But because Listen was not introduced to the new version of Dreamgirls until after the movie came out, I'm going to stick with the original. Which, for Dreamgirls, I'm pretty sure it's very close to the end. In the original Broadway cast recording, One Night Only falls in as the third last song. So I do think it fits that mold. I love this song. I love this scene. I will say the version that is my favorite is the West End, even though they now have Listen in it. I just love the, like, production on that number. But basically what's happening here is that, like, Effie has left the Dreamgirls group and is, well, she was kind of like kicked out, and she is now trying to come back into the music industry, and she records this song One Night Only as a solo performance. But then Curtis, who was involved with Effie and is now involved with Dina, steals the song basically and gives it to the Dreams, and Dina and the Dreams record a more like disco version of this song. And I don't think that, like, the lyrics of this song would traditionally fit the 11 o'clock numbers definition, but I think the scene in general, there is so much happening character development wise that it's when Effie starts a new career, Dina has this breakout moment with this song with the Dreams, but then also realizes that she stole this song from her previous best friend. Like, so much is happening in this moment. And I just love so much the production of the slow version that goes into the disco. It is genius. Right. It is so, so good on stage. And I think this actually fits the, like, big showstopper. It's one of the, it's the only one on my list that is, like, dance heavy at some points, almost full ensemble at some points. It starts off as a belty slow song and then gets into this huge number. But yeah, I think if Dreamgirls were to come out post movie, Listen is the number. It is when Dina turns on Curtis. But also in the musical, it's when Dina and Effie, like, kind of become friendly again because they both sing Listen together. So it's interesting with time and with different iterations how shows can change. Like, I want songs, 11 o'clock numbers, like, even act two openers, like, everything can kind of change when something gets revised.
Yeah, it, when putting things in different spots changes the intention or changes the purpose of different songs. It's the exact same song, but putting it here versus here, you know, makes the audience read it differently and see that those characters differently.
Yeah,
I love that song.
It's so good. Okay, we're here.
We are here for the number one 11 o'clock number. For my number one.
If this is a crossover.
I don't think so. For my number one, I have picked, in my opinion, the greatest 11 o'clock number of all time.
Okay, let me look at the list. Oh, I think is it a show we saw this year?
It is a show we saw this year.
Is it Rose's Turn?
It is Rose's Turn, in my opinion. Is that yours?
No. But
I know yours.
I actually was going to put it, but then I thought it would be yours, so I took it off.
In my opinion, this is the greatest 11 o'clock number of all time.
And in theory, I agree with you.
like nothing beats this moment.
And seeing it live, confirm.
Crazy.
I had a dream. I dreamed it for you, Joe. It wasn't for me, Herbie. And if it wasn't for me, then where would you be? Miss Gypsy Rosemary! Well, someone tell me, when is it my turn? Don't I get a dream for myself? Starting now, it's gonna be my turn. Gangway, well, get off of my runway. Starting now, I've got a thousand. This time, boys, I'm taking a thousand. Everything's coming aboard.
It's actually crazy because it's one character on stage monologuing, going through this, again, we've said it so many times tonight, this emotional moment, this emotional revelation. She's done, in her mind, everything for her children, for her daughters,
yeah,
to be famous. And yet, kind of, in this moment, she's like, what was it all for? Why did I do this? Was I selfish in doing this? And I think one of my favorite parts of 11 O'Clock Numbers is belting. When you get a performer, I think what's exciting is in a musical, when you want to show a huge emotional moment, that's often when singers really get to show all their tricks and do everything that they can do with their voice. And so oftentimes in 11 O'Clock Numbers, even though they're solo, even though they're often solos, not always group numbers, not always big production numbers, it's often a solo, but it is a singer, a performer, just getting to use every tool in their tool book to show you what they have. And this song is so great from an acting perspective and also so wonderful from a singing perspective. It really gives like performers room to play and to do things. And you, as an audience, when we saw it this summer and when I've seen previous performances of it, I'm always kind of in awe of this performance moment. And I just personally, I think it is the blueprint for 11 O'Clock Numbers.
I was going to say, not only from like a character standpoint, but also from a set stage standpoint. Like, yes. It is
so simple.
So simple, but like the lights, when her name comes up, like it's iconic. I do agree with you. I do think that it's the blueprint. I do think it is one of the best 11 O'Clock Numbers of all time. It is in the list. If you look up 11 O'Clock Numbers, it is always used as an example.
It's in every list.
It's used as like the main example for like how to do it. Yeah, what a great song.
The credit for this is lyrics by Stephen Sondheim and music by Jules Stein. So, and book by Arthur Lawrence. But for cutting the song, Jules Stein and Stephen Sondheim just created this fantastic character moment that cannot be beat. The whole of the musical, the whole of Gypsy is building up to this moment.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, I would argue that my number one does the exact same thing.
Absolutely.
I'm assuming you know what it is. I could just do like
a
gesture. I was going to save this for tearjerkers, and I think it might still come up for tearjerkers. But when you said like one of your favorite things about an 11 O'Clock Number is giving a singer the chance to belt, and this definitely happens in this song. My number one is I'm Here from The Color Purple. We have an emotional connection to this song. We watched it like every week during the pandemic together.
This song got us through the pandemic.
It really did.
It really got us through.
But it's kind of the same thing of like Celie goes through obviously this emotional journey the entirety of the show and then has this huge release moment where she just, literally what she says in this song, I'm gonna sing out. And she, that's literally what she does. She sings with everything that is in her. And I was reading something yesterday that I thought was so interesting and also crazy when you think about like all of these shows and these big belty moments is that like these songs come so late in the show and then you get a performance like Cynthia Erivo gives during this song and you're like, how is this even possible that you had anything left to give for this? Mm-hmm. But I feel like that character specifically, anybody that plays that character, like, you are spending your entire show leading up to this moment. So when you sing it, you just leave everything on the stage. And there's an amazing bootleg video of Fantasia doing it, and it's maybe not the best vocal performance I've ever seen Fantasia give. I literally cannot wait to see Fantasia in this The Color Purple movie, because speaking of American Idol, like,
let's talk icon.
But there's a video of her doing this, and again, it's not the vocal performance that I'm watching, it's the emotional, like, turmoil that she goes through from the beginning of the song and then finds peace in the I'm beautiful moment, and the audience is, like, on your side for that, and this character finally just gets to, like, have a sense of relief for the first time in this entire show. I agree that, like, Rose's turn is the blueprint, but I actually feel like I'm here followed that exact blueprint.
Yes, I agree.
To a T. So, like, both of these songs are picture-perfect 11 o'clock numbers. Like, you could not have a better song given to your characters to sing on stage. We love it so much. Like, I could talk about it for days.
Yes, it is. It is that moment where Celia is just saying, like, see me.
Yeah.
See who I am.
Like, forget everything that happened to me. Just look at at me. Isn't that how it starts? No.
I don't even remember.
I can't remember either. That's...
I'm should here we watch lyrics. It? I'm here lyrics. I'm pulling them up.
No, it starts with, I don't need you to love me. No, you don't.
She's, like, not looking for validation outside. She is, anyway, I'm crying.
If you want to watch, there are two incredible performances. Actually, there are three incredible performances of the song. The first one is the Tony Award performance. It starts with a different song. I can't remember off the top of my head right now what it is. But then everybody, like,
doesn't matter.
Steps aside and Cynthia walks out, and it's iconic. The second greatest performance of this is there's a bootleg from her final performance, I believe, or maybe it's just another performance. It is the highest quality bootleg I have seen of this performance.
Someone, like, set up a tripod. It's like, it's all good. It's
she
fine.
Is wailing. It is so good, but the best and greatest performance is what is titled the definitive I'm Here on YouTube, put together by Ryan Bloomquist with Cynthia Erivo, Oprah, and Stedman.
Yes, okay, we've talked about this video on this podcast before, but basically she performed it on Stephen Colbert, I think. I think it's on Stephen Colbert. It's not relevant. But they edit in, when Oprah was inducted into the Kennedy Center, when she was received her Kennedy Center honors, Jennifer Hudson sang it.
Yes.
And she sang I'm Here. She's a beautiful singer, but I don't really care. And Oprah reacted by just, like, putting her hands back and holding Stedman's hands. So they edited Oprah's reactions from that performance into this performance of Cynthia Erivo.
That video has, like, 4 million views on YouTube.
And we are 2 million of them. Like, swear. And it makes you cry and laugh so hard at the same time. Like, so good.
I sent you the trailer yesterday. I'm so excited for this movie.
I haven't watched it.
So I think I've never seen I've never seen the original movie. I've never seen The Color Purple on stage. I know the premise just from knowing, like, what it's about. Another tragic story.
Always.
This is a tragedy. This is a devastating book show in general. But I think what was interesting when I read was that this version of this movie, which is like a Spielberg movie, is 100% based on the musical. It is not taken from the, like, previous movie adaptation.
So
anyone that's worried about it being, like, a bad ripoff, it is a completely different take on this. It is apparently much closer to the book, and it is much closer to the musical. It's got an all-star cast. I'm very excited for this. It sounds, from what I've heard, it sounds really good. I'm so excited for Fantasia. Like, I just can't believe we're seeing her on the big screen all these years later.
You know, as American Idol stands, this is
I love Fantasia. Like, I watched season that season. Winner. What was her? Wasn't it?
I Believe.
I Believe. Yeah.
I Believe. stars across the sky. I don't know. I love Fantasia. Beautiful singer. Beautiful voice. Yeah.
Halle Bailey is in this movie. Danielle Brooks is in this movie. Taraji P. Henson. Corey Hawkins. Yes.
Coleman Domingo.
Her.
John Batiste. David Alan Greer.
Yeah. Oprah's producing or executive producing. Spielberg's directing. Quincy Jones is involved. It's an all-star team.
Spielberg and Quincy Jones are producing this. Scott Sanders, Oprah Winfrey are producing it. Directed by Blitz Bazawule.
Do you think there's going to be a new song that will be in contention for Oscars? Oh, does it say?
Good question.
I'm always curious with these ones.
I don't know. I'm not sure. I haven't heard anything about a new song. So
it comes out on Christmas. So we briefly talked about this yesterday, but I think we will be doing an episode on The Color Purple when this movie comes out.
I think so.
Maybe closer to award season, but
yeah. I think it would be interesting if we watched the original movie.
Agree.
And then also watched this new movie. I think that would be like kind of a fun.
This is maybe a dumb question that I should know the answer to, but the original movie is not a musical, correct?
No, it is based on the book.
Right. So this is
directed by Steven Spielberg.
This is a musical.
This is a musical, yes, obviously, yes. But yeah, this is the musical based on the Broadway musical, which is based on the book.
Do you remember when Danielle Brooks got picked for this, the like Zoom video that was released when she was on... Oh, you don't? Yeah. She was, like, Oprah called her on Zoom, and she was just like, what do I even do? Because Danielle Brooks, I think, is playing the same character that she played in the most recent revival on Broadway.
Oh, wow, that's so fun. That's so fun.
So.
That's great. Yeah, these top two, I personally did not pick I'm Here because I felt it would be at the top of your list, Tara. Yeah. and so I was like, let's stay away from it. Let's pick something else. But
we did not have a single crossover. Congrats to us.
Look at us.
And we did Paul not.
Rudd. Look at us.
We did not have very, like, these were all basically new shows to talk about, which is great. Just to go through some more.
So the one that, when I think quintessential 11 o'clock number, obviously I said Rose's Turn is number one, but when I think quintessential 11 o'clock number, I'm going to say this really random one, and yet I think it is such a perfect 11 o'clock number, and it is Goodbye from the musical Catch Me If You Can. I think this is...
Goodbye.
Like it just fits everything about an 11 o'clock number. It is last quarter of the show, like right near the end. It is show-stopping vocally. It has our main character kind of, you know, in that last moment before everything kind of is blowing up, he's just like, I'm done. This is my release. And I just think it is a perfect, like, it just fits the mold of a Goodbye song perfectly. And if someone was like, not a Goodbye song, an 11 o'clock number,
yeah,
so perfectly. And so if someone's like, what's an example? I would give Goodbye for Catch Me If You Can.
Well,
like,
I literally think that's niche though. Who knows
it
that
is niche
song?
I understand that it's so niche, but I also think it is such a perfect
11 no I know number. But you said you would give it as an example. No one has heard that song.
Well, they gotta go to YouTube. They gotta go to YouTube. Okay,
and specifically Aaron Tveit or Andrew Feldman.
Obviously
take your pick.
I think Aaron Tveit's vocal performance of it really assists in making it that show-stopping moment.
I agree.
Also, I mean, if we're talking about a show that has two, right before, the character of Brenda sings Fly, Fly Away, and I also think it fits, like, a really great 11 o'clock moment. But for me, Goodbye.
Another show that has two, we were talking about this a couple weeks ago when we decided to do 11 o'clock numbers, although we both don't really care for the Lola song, but Soul of a Man, and then also Hold Me in Your Heart, it's the same...
Yes.
It's the same written song, but, like, written differently for characters, obviously.
Yeah, like, it's... Their ones exude each character's personality and feelings in that moment. But yeah, they're two
my personal favorite.
Two main characters.
Soul of a Man.
Soul of a Man. I agree. Soul of a Man. Other ones that were here that I think are good. I'm just a simple sponge. You know, I'm a simple sponge.
I'm not a simple sponge. You know how I feel about that song. And Ethan Slater.
He sings that right before. It's like his pump up song. He sings it. He's like, I got something to prove.
Yeah,
and then he, you know, saves the world. There are other obvious ones. It All Fades Away.
Great. There was a moment when I thought that would be on your list.
I know, but I talk about that show too much. She Used to Be Mine.
She Used to Be Mine. A great one. Yeah. No Good Deed.
Okay, so I think that's too early.
Do you think it's for good?
I just don't think it has one.
See, I think it's no good deed because it is a revelation moment for her.
It's too early.
It's not that early.
Too much is happening. Too much happens.
There's so much scene work that happens after, not necessarily songs.
Yeah, so a lot happens after. Just because act twos are weird and they put a lot of scene work. And they don't know how to tell story through song. See, like, act two.
The Playbill or a Spotify playlist had Me in the Sky, and I was like, that doesn't... Cover Away doesn't have an 11 o'clock number. It's very early in act two. If that's earlier than anyone, No Good Deed. Which one?
There's... if I would say Come From Away has one, it would be somewhere in the middle of nowhere. 38 Your Plays, fave. Somewhere in the Middle of Nowhere. That would be mine. Where are we going? A show that it's recently been discovered I don't like, but Wait For Me.
Reprise. Yeah.
When they're like going through hell, when they're walking back out.
Yeah.
Hadestown returning to Toronto. Next year.
At the Ed Marvish Theater. Crazy. Okay. You know what? They did so well when they were here, so this actually isn't shocking. It's shocking so in terms soon. Of like... No, but also in terms of like tour schedule, like where are they directly before that they're close enough to cross the border? You know what I mean? Maybe they're in Canada still. So I actually don't know what their tour schedule is. Another one here that we haven't talked about the show in a long time, but Hairspray, I Know Where I've Been.
A side character.
It's a side character, which, yes, we could have brought that up at the beginning of this episode, but I do think it fits the mold exactly for what we're looking for in an 11 o'clock number, sung by, oh my God, what's her name?
Motormouth
Maybell. Yeah.
So one for me that similarly is a side character. Tell me what you think about this. From the musical Grease, There Are Worse Things I Could Do. To me, I love that. I think that's a beautiful 11 o'clock moment.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't really care for Grease, so it doesn't bother me either way.
Okay, Grease is whatever, but that song, like, talk about V-HUD.
I was going to say, another incredible Vanessa Hudgens moment.
Talk about Sneaker Night.
What else is on this list here?
Let's see. Give me from Modern Melly.
That's a classic, yeah. What about, like, Memory from Cats?
Another classic. That is it. That is another classic. And, okay. Yeah, the thing about Memory for me that I find interesting is that it's, you hear the themes throughout so often, and then when it finally comes, it has that emotional impact because you've been hearing, like, whispers of memory throughout the show.
I mean, Grisabella also kind of a side character, but then turns out to be so important.
Turns out she is going to the Heaviside Lair. When, in Cats, when she's going up, and they're like, up, to the Heaviside, crying. My favorite part. Was it? When I saw it on the cruise ship.
Stop there. That's the end of the sentence.
It was like the original Broadway set on the cruise ship. So, like, picture this. There's 7 people total in the audience. Okay? A full production of Cats is going on.
Yeah.
The, like, tire comes out. And then it, like, starts lifting. And she's at the top. The lights are going. And everyone's, like, at the bottom. They're like... Up to the heavy side. It was crazy. Like, literally, and this is at the end of act two. So half the audience has left. So now there's like 3 people in the audience. This, the biggest theater you can imagine. The cruise ship theaters are huge. It's actually kind of wild. I was in the front row.
That's also an experience.
It was so good. The cats were looking in my eyes. I feel like I haven't spoken about me at Cats in a while.
No, it's been a long time. Probably not since our Cats episode, which was a while ago.
Pre-pandemic. Oh, should I bring up the first time I saw Cats, where the Rum Tum Tugger came right up to me and said, get up, and then picked me up and carried me through the audience and dropped me on the lap of a man in the front row? Should we talk about that?
I don't know that would happen today.
Honestly, it was the most iconic moment of my life. Like, I don't know what will ever beat that.
A close second when we were at Kinky Boots. And Lola said, ladies, gentlemen, and pointed directly to you and said, and those who have yet to decide. Iconic. We'll never forget that.
I was right in the aisle. That was so good. Okay, here we go. Rapid fire. Legally Blonde from the musical Legally Blonde.
Oh, it was so close to being on my list, but I talk about Legally Blonde way too much. But what an iconic 11 o'clock.
The winner takes it all from Mamma Mia.
Correct.
Move On from Sunday in Park and George.
Yeah.
What I Did for Love from A Chorus Line. You know, I actually, again, need to stop talking about that musical. A Crazy Rolling from Moulin Rouge. That's what I think is the 11 o'clock. I remember when.
Yeah, they're both singing. Yeah, I agree.
Monster from Frozen.
Yes, correct. Great.
Memphis Lives in Me from the musical Memphis.
I chose not to put that on my list.
Cause... Chad Kimball. Make Me Happy from Wild Party. What Would I Do from Falsettos.
Yes. Also, we've missed Cabaret from Cabaret.
Yeah, Cabaret from Cabaret. And actually, here is another one of the greatest. Tell me if you think it's too late, but I don't think it is. Superstar from Jesus Christ Superstar.
Ooh. Someone I read yesterday on Reddit said that it's... How do you pronounce that song? Gesen... Whatever it's called. That's way too early.
Guesstimate. Yeah, that's really early in my opinion.
But then someone said it's like the 29 Lashes.
I don't know about that.
I think it's an 11 o'clock number for the guitar riff. That's what that song is.
29 Lashes is... 38 Lashes, whatever it's called.
Yeah, whatever it's called. Why did I say 29?
I don't know. I don't know exactly where it is. Judas is the... Heard some,
I think it's called like Pilot something. The 38
Pilot in Christ, maybe. I mean, it's too early.
It's close to the end. Superstar is pretty late, but it is iconic.
Well, because the crucifixion is after. Like,
yeah.
Every time I need you. Okay, that's the end of my list here.
I also have on here from my favorite show, Bonnie and Clyde, "Dying Ain't So Bad."
I forgot about that. That's actually a really good 11 o'clock number. Like, fits the mold perfect. The one other thing I want to say is I think sometimes shows will have a dream ballet in this moment.
Oklahoma.
A lot of older shows, like, let's say, like, Oklahoma, American in Paris, Singing in the Rain, lots of things. They will have the big emotional show-stopping climax be told through dance and movement and not through singing and words. Mm-hmm, and so I think it's kind of interesting that like the original template was to have it be through dance. And now we've moved more towards like a more intimate like song moment.
Well, they realized that people could sing the way that people sing. And they were like, why would we want to just only watch movement when I can watch someone emote on stage?
Yeah, like they're used for different purposes. Like sometimes, you know, it wouldn't make sense for it to be with dance. And sometimes it wouldn't make sense for someone to sing it out. It would, you know, the style of the show. But yeah, I was like, oh... All of these shows that I'm looking at, when I'm looking for the 11 o'clock number, what's actually there is this beautiful dream ballet that's accomplishing the same purpose.
Mm-hmm. I think my last one, but now it might be a little early, I Believe, Mormon.
I think it's too early.
It's not I Am Africa. And it's not Joseph Smith, American Moses.
I just don't think it has one.
Another show that's coming back to Toronto.
I know. What else is coming back to Toronto? Wicked. Everything's coming back this year.
Okay, so Wicked has not... Okay, this is
hot tea. Hot
this
goss.
Is subscriber tea. Wicked has not been officially announced as coming back to the Mervish season. However, my mother received a Mervish calendar in the mail. And she sends me a text being like, oh my God, did you know that Wicked was coming back? I'm like, sorry. No, what?
We didn't.
We didn't. I think it's coming back because actually at the time of, I think episode air date on the actual day is the 20th anniversary of Wicked.
Oh, wow.
Right? It came out on the 30th. I believe it was October 30th.
That's absolutely insane.
I think it was. They're in their 20th celebration. As we're recording, it's October 19th. They're in their 20th celebrations right now. Which, can you believe that Wicked has been on for 20 years?
Honestly, I cannot.
It's amazing. And I literally need the playbill that they've made. It has a 20 on it. It is so good. I hope it's the one that they're bringing on tour because, like, I actually just need to add it to my Wicked stash.
Opening night, October 30th, 2023. Oh my God.
So on episode release day, happy Wicked 20th birthday.
Oh.
And also happy crazy. Halloween tomorrow. But I love that it came out the day before Halloween because it feels so right. That happened. But yeah, anyway, Wicked is coming back to Toronto, and I know that I don't need to see it again, but it will be here on the day after my 30th birthday, and I actually feel like it's necessary.
Maybe you do. I don't think I need to see it again.
What if someone amazing is in this tour cast?
Who could it be?
What if Ryan McCartan is playing Fiero?
He's not going to be doing that.
But what if you would return?
I might, but I knew it. I have seen one of the greatest Elphabas, Jackie Burns, and I have seen one of the greatest Glindas, Cara Lindsay. Yeah. So, who's better than that? And the last time it was here in Toronto, in my personal opinion, it was looking rough. It was looking rough.
I think this could be my 10th time. So I think I have to hit 10.
I think you have to go.
10 for 20. I literally need the playbill. Like,
10 for 20 for 30.
Exactly. 10 for 20 for 30. Wow. Should I just throw a birthday party at Wicked?
Yeah, we're like just teleport to buy a ticket to Wicked that night. We're all going to Wicked.
That sounds so fun.
Like, honestly, that actually sounds really good. Let's make this happen.
Well, we'll put this plan into motion. Let's talk to some contacts.
Let's talk to group sales. I'm not even joking.
But everything that's coming this year is a musical. Like, I'm obsessed.
They're bringing back a lot. They're really trying to,
you know, I don't even know. Did we talk missed. About... I think we did talk about that Ain't Too Proud is coming back, and so is Chicago. Yeah, we did talk about this. And also in the, now that we're just here, in the time since our previous episode recording where we gave another update on Broadway, we now have another update. Suffs is transferring.
Yes.
It's so busy this season.
It's really busy.
Is the full, Suffs, we don't know if the cast is transferring, right?
No, but with almost a completely new creative team.
Oh, wow. Which is really interesting to me. It's going to be at the Music Box. It had a great cast at the Public, so I wonder. Yes. Philippa Sue, Jen Colella.
But people, what I've been seeing on social media, we didn't make it to see it, but what people were saying on social media is that they didn't love the production of it, or there were things about it that didn't work. So people are heartened by the fact that they've changed so much of the production team. But I do have a note about this. So one of the things they were advertising Suffs on, now we're like really getting into it. One of the things they were advertising Suffs on for its original off-Broadway run was this all-female creative team. And now they've switched out, and people said a lot of it didn't work, and that's fine. You can switch people out, but they've switched out a lot of the creative team, and the people they've switched out for are all men.
No.
It
is literally a show about women's suffrage. Why?
There are still women on the creative team, obviously, like Shana Tao wrote the music and whatever, but the people that they have switched out for men. And I'm just like, there are other women. Like, okay,
yeah,
this,
just because
this,
that
this one woman didn't work.
Yeah.
There are other women. And I know there's like so many factors into being a creative team. It's down to availability, down to whether
this is kind of a bad look for a show that's supposed to be all about
that was so women. Much of the marketing, you know, in my, from what I remember anyway, the marketing was,
yeah, it was like a women-led cast, women-led creative team, a show for women, and now a show written for women by a man.
Like, still, women are obviously still on the creative team, but I was just like, so interesting.
Yeah,
these choices.
Well,
anyway, we shall see.
Yeah. I think that makes musical like 11 or 12 for the new season.
So many.
Which is wild. But if they do bring some of that original, like, Public Theater cast over, the race for Best Actress just got heavy. So, I don't know. It's a really interesting season this year. So,
can't wait. Truly cannot wait. And we'll be there in a few weeks. So,
I know. We'll be able to weigh in on some things.
Some things.
Yeah. But yeah, that is our 11 o'clock number episode, and it is now time for our obsession of the week. Okay, Steph, what's your obsession?
Okay, well, speaking of us,
I literally think we're going to have the same obsession if it's something that came out literally 2 days ago.
Probably. Speaking of us going to New York this week, or in a few weeks, the musical Merrily We Roll Along has been doing advertising.
This is like, I have to say, we rarely cross over.
I know.
And I love when it happens, because when I was watching this, I was like, this is going to be your obsession and we have to talk about it.
The musical Merrily Roll Along just opened on Broadway, and I love that they've been setting this cast out to do publicity. They are having a good time, and there's an actor strike on right now, so people cannot promote their projects. So we are getting the cast of Merrily Roll Along doing a BuzzFeed dog interview and the iconic, no, we're getting there. And okay. The iconic, have you seen the dog interview?
Yes, of course.
Daniel Radcliffe got, like, bit.
He's really, I know, I saw.
It's so funny. He's, like, a chill dude, so it's, like, okay, but, like, I'm upset. But what is the iconic interview is, obviously, the Vanity Fair lie detector test.
It is one of the best videos that I have seen in a long time. It's also my obsession of the week, so let's go.
let's talk about it. Let's talk about it. Okay.
To the point that I was watching it while I was eating lunch at the office, and my seatmate looked over and was like, "Is that the lie detector, Merrily We Roll Along?" And I was like, "Yes." And he was like, "It's iconic." I was like, "I'm not done yet, so like, let me get through it."
We start off with Daniel Radcliffe, who really just embraces it and just tells the truth. He admits to reading dreary fan fiction, which, like, good for you. Happy
Can you
for
please
you.
Describe with, to the audience what dreary fan fiction is?
What? It's self-explanatory. Dreary fan fiction.
I don't mean, like, go into it. I mean, like, just describe who it is.
Dreary is Draco Malfoy and Harry Potter. That's their ship name, their couple name.
Sorry,
and
I feel like that info was for our mothers who listen to these episodes.
It's dreary. And dreary fan fiction is fictional stories that people have written where Draco and Harry are in love or falling in love. Yeah. And...
That's all you need to know.
That's really all you need to know. That's already been kind of the crate. Anyway, we can talk about Harry Potter fanfiction another time if we would like. We have a whole episode on it. It's called Harry Potter and the Cursed Child.
Yes.
But, okay. Daniel Radcliffe. I actually think, to me, Daniel Radcliffe is the funniest one, like, when he's answering the questions.
Because he's so just, like, stone cold about everything. Yeah. He's just like, I'm telling you. I will say, like, we have heard... and have seen photos that, like, the three of them have such amazing chemistry.
Really good friend
but it
chemistry.
Wasn't until this that I was like, oh my
other.
God, they are obsessed with each other.
When at the end of his interview, he's like, I wouldn't do this with anyone else. And then the lie detector guy says, that's a lie. They're like, oh! Lindsay Mendez steps in the hot seat next, obviously. Yes. She has a good time. Who is the most daddy? And she picks Daniel because he is an actual father. So there's that.
My favorite moment from Lindsay Mendez was when Jonathan Groff was like, we were both in a musical written by this man, slides the picture of Lin-Manuel Miranda, and he was like, which show is better, Hamilton or 21 Jump Street? 21 Jump Street, obviously.
True. What was it? When Jonathan Groff pockets the photo of Daniel Radcliffe in Equus?
Yeah,
that's
like,
good too.
I'll
that's
be
funny.
This for later. I'll also, when he pockets one? The photo of... him and How to Succeed, comedy. But the true iconic moment, there are three actually from Jonathan Groff, who is literally maybe the funniest person. Well, Daniel Radcliffe is funny in a different way. Jonathan is just like outwardly funny because he's so like charming and charismatic.
Sometimes I think Jonathan is accidentally funny. Like he's just so like...
Well, when he starts going at Judd, the lie detector man, amazing. But the three funniest moments... Angela Bassett did the thing.
What is the thing?
And they were like, do you know what it is? Yes. Have you done it? Yes. Like, comedy. Thank you, Jonathan Groff. The second one is The Spit, which if you've watched any Jonathan
that's
Groff
the video clip
ever,
that's the clip that's been like circulated, I think, him talking about the
we have
being
not
wet.
When Daniel Radcliffe is like, please use any other form of a sentence to get your point across. I am begging you. And then
he won't let it go. He will not let it go.
He will not let it go.
They've moved on. And they're just like, he's like,
exactly.
No, I need to explain.
Yes.
I need to explain what's happened.
And then, I mean, we have not been in the true splash zone, but we've been quite close to the splash zone of Jonathan Groff. So, like, we understand what they're going through on stage. We will unfortunately not be in the splash zone for Merrily We Roll Along. We're a bit too far back. But my favorite moment was when... they ask him about Merrily being his favorite flop and asks if he thinks that the expectations are the same. And I love that he tells all of us to go in with no expectations because that is how you should go in with everything. And I actually agree. Although I did read a review today that was like, believe the hype, it's better than expected.
Ooh, I have not read a review. I've just seen like brief clips. I've watched the bows like 500 times.
We're
I'm obsessed with... the tiny child that they bring up during the bows.
I was going to say, we're also obsessed with the, like, photo strip, like...
Yes.
Playbill, that also whatever thing that
the
they have
booth.
At the theater for the photo booth.
I want the magnet. I will be buying the magnet.
It's just... the promo that they're doing right now, I think, is really smart. And we haven't seen promo like this for a Broadway show in a really long time.
They're, you know, I was talking to my family about this show the other day, and we're talking about Daniel Radcliffe being it, because obviously he is an A-list actor. And I'm like, but at the same time, I don't think it's stunt casting, but also I don't think he stands out in this show because of, like, the caliber of performer and Broadway performer that Jonathan Groff and Lindsay Mendez are. Like, I think as a trio, they work, and I mean, we haven't seen the show yet, so who knows, but I think as a trio going into a Broadway show, to me, they feel on the same level. And maybe other people might feel differently, but I don't feel like, oh, Daniel Radcliffe is so extremely, like, I don't think he shadows the rest of the show, in my opinion.
No, I don't think he's a stunt cast. I do think that Jonathan and him are star cast in terms of, like, yeah. They have...
And Lindsay. Lindsay's yes, the only Tony Award winner there.
She is, but Lindsay hasn't made it. I know we'll talk about All Rise here, but Lindsay has not made it to, like, mainstream media the same way that, like, Jonathan Groff and Daniel Radcliffe have. The other thing that I loved at the beginning of this video is when they start with Daniel Radcliffe and Jonathan Groff puts on his, like, Mindhunter voice. Iconic.
When it's he's like, just interrogation. Like,
we're calibrating the test.
It's like, who is the best? Okay, then what my other question is, Jonathan Groff said he was a dance captain of a Broadway show, and I was like, which Broadway show is he the dance captain of?
Well, what has he done recently? Hamilton? Little Shop? Was it Little Shop?
It can't have been. Jonathan Groff, dance captain.
It's not Merrily.
I don't think so. And then Lindsay Mendez was like, dance captain for Everyday Rapture, which is so funny. Are you familiar with Everyday Rapture?
No.
Okay, it's a Cherie Renee Scott almost solo show. And she had two backup dancers, and they were backup singers / dancers, and it was Lindsay Mendez and Betsy Wolf. So,
so she's Mendes the dance captain of a three-person show?
She's like, what show are you at? Everyday Rapture. Three people. Okay, I'm on his Wikipedia searching the word dance captain. His Broadway debut as an understudy for the lead role played by Christopher Hanke, swing and dance captain for the musical In My Life by Joseph Brooks.
Wow.
Opening on October 20th, closing on December 11th, 2005, after 61 performances. So again, I don't really think, this was, you know, a big moment. It was at the Music Box, 2005.
When he said dance captain, all I could think about was his, like,
Anything Goes.
Anything Goes miscast. Yeah. Anyway, it is such, like, really the funny. Three of them together, amazing, but, like, this is one of the best, like, lie detectors I've seen.
It is. Ever. I like when they lie detector each other.
Yeah.
I don't want them to be lie detected by it.
It's 20 minutes, but I wanted it to be way longer. Yeah.
Also, the puppy interview is really funny when Daniel Radcliffe gets bitten by the dogs. One of the dogs is very aggressive.
The producer's like, are you bleeding? He's like, yeah, it's fine. I'm like, this is a liability. Being a producer, I'm like, this is a liability.
I'm like, adopt all these dogs. And I want to be like, except this one. Except this one's bitten everybody
well,
here.
No, he got in between a fight of the dogs. And was the dog was trying to bite the other dog. And then he broke skin. I just love that, like, the three of them are doing these things. Because exactly what you said, like, no one else is doing interviews right now. So BuzzFeed is like... So you guys, let's go.
We've got a Broadway show.
You know what? We should do it for all Broadway shows. Everybody should be getting this. I'm actually surprised, I guess, because, like, the strike wasn't on. But, like, this seems like something I would love to see. I'm now pitching this, Vanity Fair. Please mm-hmm. listen to me. What if we have, like, Josh Groban and Annalee Ashford do the lie detector test together?
They're leaving.
In January. We've got time.
It's too late. They're leaving. Because also, like, this is, like, Tony
it's for
promotion.
Promo. It's for promo, I know. And that's where we'll leave it for today. So that was our joint obsession of the week. I know, it's been a long time. And that was our episode on 11 o'clock numbers. If there is an 11 o'clock number that we missed, please let us know.
We definitely did.
We definitely missed many. But if you want to listen to any of our other ranking episodes, you can do that by subscribing to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also watch us on YouTube. There is actually a ranking episode playlist on YouTube, so you can watch those there. And you can leave us a comment and subscribe to us on YouTube.
And you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Off2BOA Podcast with the number 2, or on TikTok at Off2Broadway.
And we will see you guys next time.
Bye.